I'll ask again to have you continue to pray. I realize that each time that a minister preaches, and we say this time and time again, but it's so true that it's a miraculous thing that a man can even speak. And if we truly believe what we say, that it's a message from God, as Brother Jason prayed, message from God that we all need to hear, then it's a frightful responsibility. But it's miraculous. Now, that being every time, but today it seems like with the thoughts and the verses that throughout the week that I was drawn to, and they seem disconnected, just a bunch of verses. And yet I saw the points and the point that I wanted to make in this, and so it will be miraculous if that truly happens. And give God all the praise if, in fact, I'm able to bring this all together and kind of go back and remind of the first few verses that I've gone to. Brother Elder John Mark Clark told me last month at some point that when he was exercising, that Elder Ed Kirkpatrick had told him that there needed to be a point to the sermon, not just a bunch of stuff and all. There needs to be a point, and that's where I waver a lot of times and all. And yet we end up think of the song that I believe Sister Maria selected, More Love to Thee, and Brother Jason, I believe, Master the Tempest is Raging, that. And then the final song that Brother Tim selected, the point ends up being Jesus Christ, what he's done for us, God being the sovereign majesty of ours. But with all those couple of songs kind of put together, encapsulate in keeping our focus upon serving God, and it's during all this raging, the tempest and so forth. And so I'm going to head that way, but I want to start in the book of Ephesians this morning. In the third chapter of Ephesians, Paul writes, "For this cause I, Paul, the prisoner of Jesus Christ, for ye Gentiles..." And he goes through in words a very long sentence here, but I want to go down to the sixth verse as this sentence is wrapped up in the seventh verse, "that the Gentiles should be fellow heirs and of the same body and partakers of his promise in Christ by the gospel, whereof I was made a minister according to the gift of grace of God given unto me by the effectual working of his power." He's saying, for this cause, and if you back up in chapter 2, it mentions in around the 13th verse or so, talking about the Gentiles being made nigh by the blood of Christ, and he is our peace. He brought down the middle wall of partition. So for this cause, Paul, of course, was the apostle to the Gentiles, and yet he preached to the Jews many times. But he had a specific cause and purpose in preaching of the gospel, and of the saving of the Gentiles here in time. They were not lost eternally prior to them being brought in by Jesus Christ into his family, that middle wall of partition being brought down. Through the gospel, then they're saved from ignorance being called the uncircumcised and heathens, dogs. And that was his purpose here, the gospel. Jesus Christ and him crucified is who Paul concentrated on. I remember when I was exercising my gift to preach prior to being ordained in 2006, and throughout, I believe it was from 2002 or sometime in there, and as I began that, as others, and as they well should, begin to judge that there might be a potential gift there, a calling of God is from God, as Paul had here, Brother Mike, my pastor at the time, said, well, I want you here at Old School, your church, most of the time, most of the Sundays and so forth, and they gave me an appointment there, and so I was there, had to be there then, but there was also a need throughout the multiple states. I found myself really going over into Arkansas a great deal, have a fondness for all the people and the churches over there in Arkansas, some in Louisiana, a little bit in Oklahoma, and in Texas, but there was a need, so I had to walk a fine line, and I was only at my home church typically that one Sunday on my appointment, but they had to judge whether or not I was even called to preach. That church had to do it. It was their responsibility, no others. And yet, there's a lot that goes into that. But to keep this purpose of preaching the gospel in my mind at that time and not being diverted and distracted, and I'll get more into that in a moment, but yet seeing the needs of so many churches at that time, many churches without pastors, without preachers, and obviously had to dig the bottom of the barrel when they called me. But I went. I felt a need, and I feel like I followed God in that. So now let me jump to 1 Peter, the first chapter, get a verse or two right there, and then I'll jump over to the Old Testament, get a couple of scenarios there. 1 Peter, the first chapter, of course, he begins his opening, his salutation here, and he mentions in the second verse, grace unto you and peace be multiplied. Then I want to go down to the fifth verse. Says, he's talking to those who are kept by the power of God through faith unto salvation, ready to be revealed in the last time. Wherein ye greatly rejoice, though now for a season, if need be, ye are in heaviness through manifold temptations, that the trial of your faith, being much more precious than of gold that perisheth, though it be tried with fire, might be found unto praise and honor and glory at the appearing of Jesus Christ. So it all ends up again at Jesus Christ there, everything. Our trials, but also this grace and peace being multiplied here. But it says that apparently for a season, going through manifold temptations. Now being tempted, when I first think of that word and the definition that comes to mind is the point of being tempted by something, to do something, to go into sin, steal something. No one's looking. I can take that right now. To lie, to cheat, whatever it is. That's what I first think. But this is talking about manifold adversities. Adversities, afflictions, calamities misfortunes. And so they're going through this, and then the trial of your faith, this trial here of fire. I saw a saying last week somewhere. It said that you'll meet God, the Lord, in the furnace long before you meet Him in the sky. We long to meet Him. I long that when I hear my name called, I'm going to meet Him in the air and forever be with the Lord. But we are meeting Him right now in the furnace, and this fire is more precious than that of gold. So as we keep our focus and our purpose in glorifying God and being reminded of the story, like in this last song that Brother Tim led there, or showing more love to Him as Sister Maria selected, we have to take into account we're going to go through through these tempests in the song that Brother Jason selected this morning. But at the same time, we continue and we will be blessed. We'll see in a moment, Lord willing, how that even in captivity, and we're in here in time, yes, we're under captivity in the bondage of sin, but eternally we're not. We've been freed from that eternally, and we see that and realize it, and it gives us hope and strength. But here, there are manifold temptations, afflictions, distress, calamities, and so yet we still keep this focus and that Paul spoke of in Ephesians. Now in Jeremiah chapter 29, Jeremiah 29, and that prophet happens to have several pages. It's not like Obadiah, so maybe find it after Psalms and Isaiah and so forth. The 29th chapter is where I'd like to go. Toward the end, in fact, at the end of that 29th chapter of Jeremiah, 30th verse says, "Then came," and again, I hope to tie all this together, "Then came the word of the Lord unto Jeremiah, saying, send to all them of the captivity, saying, thus saith the Lord concerning Shemaiah, Nehelamite, because that Shemaiah hath prophesied unto you, and I sent him not, and he caused you to trust in a lie. Therefore, thus saith the Lord, behold, I will punish Shemaiah, the Nehelamite, and his seed. He shall not have a man to dwell among this people, neither shall he behold the good that I will do for my people, saith the Lord, because he hath taught rebellion against the Lord." One of the things that I see as I pass through this is where he says in that 32nd verse, "Behold, I will punish Shemaiah, the Nehelamite, and his seed." To think that something that, they're false prophets here. He sent Jeremiah. Jeremiah wrote and he prophesied, and the other prophets of God. But if they, in fact, they were messengers. Ministers are messengers. I do not equate myself with a prophet, with an apostle, and so forth. But if it's as Brother Jason prayed, that God sends the message through the minister to the congregation, then if I purposely mislead God's people, then I can see God being the same. He's not the God of the Old Testament. He is God. And so I can bring this into, and that's fine if I'm going to be punished for something that I say or do as a minister, as a child of God. But for my seed to suffer, for my family to suffer because of that I'm fearful for that. So these manifold, and speaking of temptations as being tempted and so forth, then I need to be reminded of that. But the whole time being focused on what I'm to do as a minister of the gospel. There are many things swirling around, but yet that I have a duty and a responsibility to God's people, being having Jesus Christ dwelling within them. And so I take that responsibility seriously. But when I look at the sufferings of Jesus Christ, my Savior, or the apostles that many suffered martyrdom and so forth, being scourged and beaten and left for dead and so forth, I just don't have that many distractions, afflictions, the distresses that they had. But anyway, so moving on in here, as we look at these few verses here, we see the love and mercy of God to his people. They're in captivity. They've been taken captive by the Babylonians for 70 years, and yet he hasn't deserted them. as we remain focused on what our purpose is in life, and that is to glorify God, then He will bless us in doing that as He did the children of Israel. They represent that family there, that massive family that represented the entire family of God, of which we are a part. I fully believe that. So here, to describe this situation here in this same chapter 29, Jeremiah, but a little bit farther back up in the 10th verse, it tells them 70 years is what they will be in captivity in Babylon. But then he says, after the 70 years be accomplished at Babylon, I will visit you and perform my good word toward you in causing you to return to this place, for I know the thoughts that I think toward you. I think we have indications all the time of the thoughts that God thinks toward us. Now, when He looks at me, through the finished work of Jesus Christ, He sees me that righteous then. We certainly know His thoughts toward us. But as we remind you, ministers do time and time again of the failings of Israel, of the Hebrew people, and going into idolatry and so forth, that He still never left this people. They were His. He promised them. We know His thoughts, and they know His thoughts toward them, thoughts of peace, not of evil, to give you an expected end. Then shall ye call upon me, and ye shall go and pray unto me, and I will hearken unto you. He's never gone back on anything that He said. When we go to Him, He will hearken unto us. He does. And yet, this morning, even during the song service, as I knew what I had on my mind, and as confusing as this may be in presentation to you, when I heard some of these songs that were selected and read the words, as we certainly should, then I saw and I felt like, I felt reassurance. I felt like, maybe another miracle can take place, and that God will reign in my thoughts. And if not, He'll guide me how He wants to guide me, and you'll still be preached to, because in Christ Jesus you deserve it, because He has hearkened under your prayer and your thoughts, we see His great mercy. I've heard in times, years past, even when I was a young boy, I'd hear people talking and criticizing the preachers. You preach too much grace, too much doctrine, and so they wanted some other stuff. I don't know what, and so I know we can go too much into that, but it's so precious. It's so precious. But sometimes we have to be reminded where we came from to see how precious it is. And the whole time going through, living through the tempests that are raging, the trial of our faith, it's hard to be strong. So when we see, and even if I'm not suffering, someone else is, and you want to relieve them of that. We have so much love of Christ that we want to take that pain from them. Just give it to me, Lord. Yet it's not in us to do that. We see, though, the strength in people, in their faith, in experiencing these tempests and tribulations and afflictions in their lives. It's amazing to me. Then shall ye call upon me, and ye shall go and pray unto me, and I will hearken unto you. And ye shall seek me and find me when ye shall search for me with all your heart. I will be found of you, saith the Lord. I will turn away your captivity, and I will gather you from all the nations I have driven you, saith the Lord. I will bring you again into the place whence I caused you to be carried away captive. God caused this captivity. He punished his people. If he didn't care, and not just care for, but love this people, he wouldn't have sent them even into bondage. He would have just destroyed them. He certainly could. And we know the history of this of Israel and so forth. But he punished them. And then while they're in captivity, while we're in captivity, they prayed, they searched for him. And so he guides us in that. And yet, even saying that, hypocritical again. I think there have been times when I did not pray. I didn't have the longing to pray to God. And yet, somehow, he brought me again to the place that I needed to be. Let me jump to Psalm 102 and for just a moment. Psalm 102, 102nd Psalm. So we started with Paul and his purpose, his focus, the cause, and then certainly he went through temptations, trials of his faith. And then the children of Israel, while in captivity, here in Psalm 102, David says, Hear my prayer, O Lord, and let me cry, come unto thee. Let my cry come unto thee. Hide not thy face from me in the day when I am in trouble. Incline thine ear unto me in the day when I call. Answer me speedily. Now, I've never said a prayer where I told the Lord, asked for something and said, well, answer this fast. Dude, I want this now. I did. I thought it, so he knew it and all. It's in my thoughts. Well, I want this now. May not have wanted the answer he gave me, or he's going to give me, but he says, answer me speedily. For my days are consumed like smoke, and my bones are burned as an hearth. My days are consumed like smoke. I see that sometime. Now, the last month has gone by fast. Took a new job. I work now a solid month and all. It's gone by fast. And in a good way, though, it's been good. I'm thankful for that. You don't know till you go to a new job how it's going to be. But some days I look and I think it's just like smoke. It's a vapor. A life is just a vapor. It goes by so quickly. And so then I'll think, well, I need to get focused on what I need to do in the remainder of my life. I don't think I'm middle-aged, being almost 60. I don't think I'm going to live to be 120, so I'm past middle age. I think I can agree to that. I don't mean to depress anyone, but it's just I don't see it happening. I pray to Lord Jesus, come back, come quickly. So we see the situation here with David. Then he says, so we see him going through adversity here, adversities, temptations, trials here, just like the children of Israel in captivity and out of captivity, just like Paul over there, and so just like us, as Peter wrote to us, my heart is smitten and withered like grass, so that I forget to eat my bread. That phrase, part of that sentence, jumped out at me and kept. So seemed like I forget, so that I forget to eat my bread. Some people have told me, you know, I was at home, I got busy, and all, I just forgot to eat a meal. I've never forgotten to eat a meal. So I have to fight not eating most of the time. But in this, the calamity, the distress was so great that I forget to eat my bread. Sometimes, and I have to be reminded of things time and time again, just things that I see in life, whether it's out in public, in the church, or wherever, to remind me of my priorities that I think, okay, I see my priorities, I see what my focus should be, and I need to get on that, and then 5 minutes, and I'm off again. It's like smoke again, and I wither, withereth. But I forget to eat my bread. I forget these things. And I think of Paul where he said that there were some things that to preach the gospel that have to be forgotten. and all. I remember, I believe, Brother Ronnie reminded me of, I believe it was you, that Dad had driven through terrible Houston traffic and got up to preach. I believe that was the situation, and said, well, if a man's going to preach, a man's going to have to die. And so he knew that he was in no frame of mind, and that was miraculous that he preached that day or not, whatever it was there. So as we move on here, that David withered his heart like grass, so that he forgot to eat his bread there. Let me get, and so this is David. I'm going to try to head into closing here, but let me go to 1 Samuel and get a very familiar scenario here. 1 Samuel, the first chapter, so you may already know what this entails. But speaking of that forgetting to eat my bread and the adversities here, and we can bring both those things back into this first chapter of Hannah's situation here. The fourth verse, it's when the time was that Elkanah offered. He gave to Peninnah, his wife, and to all her sons and daughters portions. But unto Hannah he gave a worthy portion, or a double portion, for he loved Hannah. But the Lord had shut up her womb. And her adversary also provoked her sore. So not only, you know, she can't bear a child. The Lord has shut up her womb. She can't bear a child. She desires to do that. And so that's bad enough, but then she has an adversary here. So it's difficult to keep focused on Jesus Christ and Him crucified when there's an adversary, adversaries, so many. And again, I don't feel right even bringing this up, because I don't have these troubles. Lord's so merciful to me. So she can't, and I can't imagine myself personally that feeling there. And yet, hearing firsthand someone in this situation, I kind of do. So her adversary also provoked her sore, for to make her fret, because the Lord had shut up her womb. And a seventh verse, first chapter here, 1 Samuel, and as he did so year by year, when she went up to the house of the Lord, so she provoked her. Therefore she, Hannah, wept and did not eat. That adversary caused her, she didn't eat. She's beyond that. I tend to when things are in so much turmoil, whether it's at work, in family, at church, whatever it is, it's just the tempest is raging is an understatement in whatever facet of my life. I tend to grab hold of things that I feel comfortable with, whether it be a simple routine. I'm teased a lot for my routines. I'll just mention this one time when we were working, I had to actually wear a suit to work in Houston every day at American General. And somehow one morning I brushed my teeth before I shaved by mistake, forgot to put on my tie. I get out of my routine and I'm going to throw everything's going to get thrown off. I find comfort in that. But when I find comfort in so much, you know, sometimes I go to a meeting, I come back to my home church, and there's a comfort there. And to go home, to go to our homes, that should be a place of safety and comfort. And because it's because of what all else is there. It's not just the structure and all, but we feel comfort there, whether it be our husband or wife, our children, whatever it is, but in all the turmoil. To not even feel like eating because of all the adversities here. But Hannah, then it goes on here let me jump to the 10th verse. And she was in bitterness of soul and prayed unto the Lord and wept sore. This was heavy upon her, upon precious Hannah here. She wanted this in her life, to bear a child and all. And so she prayed unto the Lord and wept sore. She's in adversity here, in calamity. It's upon her, but yet she still prayed. And so we go on to the 18th verse. Eli's answering to her in all as we go. I don't want to read all that. And she said, let thine handmaid find grace in thy sight. So the woman went her way and did eat, and her countenance was no more sad. Now, Eli had said, grant thee thy petition that thou hast asked of him, of the Lord. He had not heard it, but he knew it here. And so she went away no more sad. She didn't know at that time for certain that she was going to bear a child, but she went away and her countenance was no longer sad. And so she ate again. Just a routine thing that she went back to doing there. And so she went away no more sad. And then 19th verse, the Lord remembered her. And then 20th verse, she conceived. But prior to that, I think of Hezekiah, King Hezekiah. He asked for a sign of some sort to show that he was going to add 15 years. God was going to add 15 years to his life, and he had prayed. He'd prayed to God, and so then I tell you what. I think if I was God, I'd say, "No, you go on. If you have to have a sign, I'm just taking the 15 years back and all." God's a merciful and just God, and so he gave him a sign, and even gave him a choice: which way have the sun go forward or backwards? And said, "You choose." And so he said, "Well, go backwards." And I think about it. It's not like our ridiculous time change twice a year here in the United States, but for the sun to go back, then that's miraculous there. And he gave him a son, had 15 more years, and so forth. But Hannah didn't know at this point, but she went away. Her countenance was no longer sad. Her faith told her her petition to God would be granted of her. So she's made it through all these adversities. This one adversary here that made her fret and weep sore there, and yet she remained focused on what her desire was here, and I think it was a godly desire. And so Paul, going all the way back to the Apostle Paul, that he saw what he needed to do in everything, all the peripheral things that a church member should do and be doing and working, or a minister, a deacon, whoever it is, whatever they're to be doing, there has to be that one purpose, that focus in our lives. And a minister, it is to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ, because since he has already saved you by the sacrifice of his only begotten son, then now we are to hear the good news of that salvation in song, prayer, and preaching. We're to hear that good news, and we do, and we see God in that. Back to Psalm 102, 102nd Psalm, down, I believe it's down a little bit farther, Psalm 102, and I'll begin to close here. In this prayer here, David, as I read, where his heart was smitten, withered like grass, so that I forget to eat my bread. In the 17th verse, jump down there. He will regard the prayer of the destitute and not despise their prayer. This is a statement of fact. It is a promise. He will regard the prayer of the destitute and not despise their prayer. So he does that, and yet just to know if I put myself in someone else's situation and think, well, maybe they don't think that their prayers are being heard. Maybe they think, what's the use of praying? You know, that you can get to that point. I think we know, for the most part, the power of prayer. We've seen enough of them answered and so forth. But I try to encourage everyone to pray. And sometimes I think, you know what that seems like, and it's not a cop out. It's not a nice phrase to say. I will pray for you. I will continue to pray for you. You pray and so forth. But but as I see everything that everyone else is going through, and I do wish I could say just the right thing. That whether they're having difficulties in school or in their marriage, in their work life, whatever it is, or financially, if I could say just the right thing, but God will regard the prayer of the destitute, the ones that I know of, and I hate to say that it's plural, that question. Can you imagine? Question, maybe you have. Questioning, why am I even still living? Lord, why haven't you not taken me home? It breaks my heart to hear that, and not having the words, but they're destitute. They're in bondage and captivity in what they're suffering. The whole time in wanting to help everyone with everything, and I should. I feel such a good burden, a burden in a good sense, to help the people of God in these things. And yet, I must remain focused upon my gift and calling, which is preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ, if in fact I have a gift in doing that, and that I point those, and maybe the message will have an effect on that person who is destitute. I'm seeing the ones that I'm referring to that wish that they just go on. There are many times I've thought that, and then I think, well, wait a minute, I want to do this, and this in my life, and I want to experience things and all that. Yeah, you all are having the blessings now of experiencing, not particularly firsthand raising kids, but maybe the grandkids. I know that raising kids is hard. The adversaries and the distresses that are cast upon us. That's the trial of our faith. We're in that, and yet we can see God in that furnace, and we can come out of that not even having the sense, the aroma of smoke, not even having a singe on us. We can pass through that fire, that furnace here, because God is there. Many times He sends us into that furnace. And I've heard the phrase of a sentence, old age is not for the faint of heart. Well, life isn't either. And yet God has given us something so special. And I feel like that it's because he loves us. He loves all of it. And I want to understand that love that he gave his son. That we prayed, that Brother Jason led us, prayed through our intercessor, Jesus Christ. That's how much he loved us. But I can't even equate that. I can't calculate that love that God has for us. But so I would admonish you to keep focused on Jesus Christ and that. Yes, there's so many other things that we can do in our lives. Certainly help others and lift them up and hold them up. Even if they're already up and standing then, but hold their arms up when they become weak in what they need. But yet sometimes it takes us telling one another what's troubling us. We should do that. I confess I've not always done it. I've told you that. I don't want to come across as, well, there you go. What's wrong this time with him? You know, it's always something and all. But we should share our adversaries, our adversities with one another. And certainly, we're already praying for one another. We're doing that all the time. And then even audibly, we do that. But through that, we keep focused. Through the fire, the trial of our faith, then, Let's remember Jesus Christ always and certainly His bride. May God bless and keep you is my prayer. We'll sing a song now and open the doors of the church. If anyone has a desire to join you, let us know.
Let's stand and sing number one.